Welcome to the Lifestyle Show on VoiceCore. I'm your volunteer reader, Linda Martin. For the next half hour, I'll read articles starting with this magazine, Oprah's Special Edition 2026. And this article is titled, The Science of Joy. What really is joy? Why don't we always feel it when we think we should? And how can we get better at sparking it all year long? Imagine this. You're walking along a path in your favorite park when a butterfly suddenly flutters past. You stop to observe its magnificent colors, the curvature of its wings, and the velvety surface of its skin. To your surprise, it lands on your hand. You delight in mutually observing each other. And a profound feeling of well-being and satisfaction moves through you. What is that feeling? Is it joy? Is it happiness? Scientists are currently investigating the difference between the two. To understand the distinction and why it matters, we spoke with experts about what joy is and how we can cultivate it beyond the holiday season. While joy and happiness are both positive expressions, they are not one and the same. Happiness is a state of mind and well-being that can be modified by external events. Think of kids excitedly playing with their just-opened holiday gifts until a new distraction catches their attention. Joy, on the other hand, can be thought of as a feeling that is spontaneous and often involuntary, but richer and more meaningful than happiness. The intensity of the emotion we feel when we experience joy comes from an inner connection to what we value and a presence in the moment to appreciate it. It's the soul-settling awe, for example, of looking around a room and realizing how grateful you are for the people celebrating the holiday with you. Until relatively recently, experts rarely honed in on the nuances of this mysterious emotion. It is not easy to talk about joy. Is not, said George E. Vallant, M.D., a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. It can feel too intense, too private for others. That is why social scientist and economist love happiness. Happiness is tame. Joy is laughing from the gut and weeping with joy. Happiness displaces pain. Joy encompasses pain. For the past few decades, psychologists, psychiatrists, and other researchers at leading universities have gathered and analyzed data to pinpoint exactly what defines joy. They don't always agree on the definition and often use terms like joy, bliss, and happiness interchangeably in their work. However, the American Psychological Association Dictionary of Psychology classifies joy into two distinct types. Passive joy, encompassing tranquility and contentment, like being alone in nature, and the more expressive active joy associated with engagement and the desire to share one's feelings with others. The latter feeling can often be intense, including pleasure, delight, and contentment to varying degrees. Where most scientists do align on how joy benefits us, it's been found that joy not only contributes to good health and longevity, but, like gratitude, can also bind us to one another. Our brains are hardwired with a motivational system that reinforces human connections, empathy, and attachment. And one of the keys to this system is joy. Ultimately, joy can lead us to make personal connections, strengthen our family bonds, and grow our community. For example, baby's programmed to respond with an irresistible, joyous smile when making eye contact with their caregivers. Such social responses are evoked by and in turn produce mutual joy. Communal joy also has evolutionary value. If early humans did not band together, they may have perished, explains Vallant. The lymphatic system, the part of our brains that's linked to behavior and emotion, helps facilitate strong attachments. Relationships, loyalty, and communal bonding were enormously helpful to our ancestors. He goes on to say that whereas happiness and excitement speed up the heart, joy and cuddling slow the heart down, reducing the level of cortisol, all of which produces a calm feeling. Joy is connected to the universe, connecting us with one another. It's about relationships. You can be happy by yourself, but it would be hard to feel joy on a desert island, says Valiant. Laugh a lot. One of the many ways joy and our brain chemistry bring people together is through laughter, which releases a feel-good cocktail of hormones. We release endorphins, giving us a feeling similar to the runner's high, says Jennifer Atker, PhD, a behavioral scientist and chaired professor at Stanford Graduate School of Business. We lower our cortisol, making us feel calmer, and these shifts in our brain impact not just how we see ourselves and how we behave, but how others see us and how they behave. Joy is not a happy accident, but a choice we make, Aker says. It's about being more generous with your laughter and finding delightful moments in the day. When you don't take yourself too seriously, you laugh effortlessly, and that's when joy flows. In essence, humor paves the way for friendship and connection. It turns out that people who laugh together before having a conversation end up connecting in ways that feel 30% more intimate and authentic, says Aker. Not only are these connections crucial to forming strong community bonds, they can also have a lasting impact on our physical health. Embrace the calm. Loving relationships and a positive outlook protect us from mental and physical decline and are better predictors of longevity and a happy life than social class, IQ, or even genes, says the Harvard Study of Adult Development, which tracked participants' health data for nearly 80 years. Other research indicates that joy can activate the parasympathetic nervous system, the part of our body that remains active when we're at rest, but that also leads us to the feeling calm and relaxed. Activating of the parasympathetic system has been shown to buffer stress, lower pulse rate, promote digestion, and enhance memory. Joy, like any positive emotion, can contribute to living a good life, explains cognitive scientist Laurie Santos, PhD, a professor of psychology at Yale University. Experiencing a more positive mood can improve things like your immune system. Schedule merry moments. You may be thinking, if the secret to aging well is joy, then great. I'll spend all of my time doing what feels good. Easier said than done, since we truly bring joy may be more elusive than you expect. The reason is that humans can get used to gratifying experiences rather quickly. Think of the decline in pleasure one feels after the first bite of a brownie or after purchasing a big ticket item. Once the novelty has worn off, we no longer draw the same bliss we once did. When we pursue happiness and think we've attained it, its meaning shifts, Aker says, and we return to our previous level of emotion and start the pursuit again. Psychologist call this phenomenon hedonic adaptations, or one's innate ability to return to a personal, preset level of happiness, no matter how life-changing an event has been. Luckily, there are still ways to cultivate ongoing moments of joy, and it starts with awareness. By recognizing that we have a natural tendency to balance our intense emotions, we can choose activities such as hobbies, journaling, and volunteering to help others that may alter our joy and happiness baseline. It turns out that joy is complex, but not impossible to find. Most important, once we do find it, joy is something we can unwrap throughout the year. And Dolly Parton says, spending time with little children, especially my own little nieces and nephews, always brings me joy. There's innocence and honesty in little children. I feel safe and loved, and they're safe and loved by me. You're tuned in to Voice Core. My name is Linda Martin, and I'm reading from the Oprah Magazine Special Edition. Our next article is titled, Choosing Joy. I was choosing to see joy everywhere and didn't even know it. And this is by Ada Rodriguez. When I was a kid growing up in Miami's inner city, we played a game called the Dozens, also known as roasting, cracking, and snapping. The aim was to poke fun at someone else in front of an audience. Nothing was off limits. Not a dead relative, not illness, not even poverty. Whoever got the most laughs won. While most suburban kids were going to soccer practice after school, I was roasting my friends while walking home in the scorching heat. See, we didn't have the resources to deal with our pain and problems. We had to find joy in our circumstances, and I found it by making others laugh. Laughter became my currency, and I went on to establish a career in professional stand-up comedy. I have my childhood and the sport of roasting to thank for helping me develop a skill set for rifling, along with very thick skin. My friends often ask, hey, how do you always see the silver lining in messed up situations? The answer is simple. Joy is always the better option. It's a choice you make, and sometimes choosing joy is the harder choice. For me, growing up poor and in the midst of violence, laughing at the tough stuff often allowed me to keep going. I'd have been a wreck if I were constantly down every time something bad happened. Something was always happening. Today, I feel joy when I know others are laughing because of how I'm using my words, no different than those brutal summers on the block. I can close my eyes while on stage and see every single kid I grew up with cackling at the audacity of my mouth. Back then, I knew people were laughing at the things I was saying, but I was unaware of what was happening on a subconscious level. I was healing through connection with others. I was choosing to see joy everywhere and didn't even know it, and that could only be good. These days, when I'm not on stage, I spend time with my niece at the playground or volunteering at retirement homes. I feel a deep joy for all the everyday people who make me laugh, but grandmas and babies are truly my jam. Human beings feel so perfect when they get here or are about to leave. It's somewhere in the middle where things get a little messy. Being able to brush off anything and move along in my own bliss is a gift. No matter how others may view where I came from, I will always be thankful to my hood for my quick wit and my unwavering superpower to call it all joy. And next it says, redefining joy. We tend to think it only comes in the form of momentous life events. But as I've gotten older, I've realized it's not the bells and whistles that bring me joy. And this is by Gail King. Children have always brought me joy, which is part of the reason why I'm always known I wanted my own. Fun fact, by the time I was in seventh grade, I'd already picked out placeholders and names for my future children, Rusty and Dusty. 20 years later, when I found out that I was expecting my first child, I honestly really wanted a boy, mostly because, as the oldest of four girls, I've always dreamed of having a big brother. So, when my favorite daughter, Kirby, arrived, I immediately thought, well, this isn't quite what I had planned. The point is, we tend to think that joy only comes in the form of momentous life events, like, say, having a child, and all those big days add up to one joyous ball. But as I got older, I began to realize that it's not the bells and whistles that bring me joy. Instead, it's the little daily things, like when my daughter and son, yes, I did finally have a son, were kids, and I'd catch their last smile at bedtime and their first one in the morning. There was no other feeling like it. These days, the joy comes in even smaller doses, like when the dentist calls to cancel my appointment. If you know me at all, you know that I'm terrified, with a capital T, of the dentist. Knowing that I have good health is 100% more important than ever. Another thing that fills me with joy, seeing someone else's dream come to life, whether that's being accepted to the college of their choice or landing an ideal job, getting cast in a knockout movie role, or just receiving a really good birthday gift. Those moments never fail to lift me up. Bottom line, sure, I may be a lifelong member of Team Glass Half Full, but joy doesn't have to be something big and life-changing. In fact, I challenge you to take a page from my playbook and discover the little things that bring you joy each and every day. Did you know that joy is the easiest emotion to recognize? According to several studies, regardless of someone's cultural background, we can recognize it by a key element. For instance, a chin-up neck posture. My name is Linda Martin, and I'm reading from the Oprah Magazine 2026 edition. Now, this next article is titled, A Doctor Said Good News, Her Toe is Moving. Mom's reaction was, You can do better than that. And this was written by Mary Alice Tolley Elias. A virus with no cure or vaccine, quarantining, not being able to see a single member of my family. I was deeply saddened by the COVID pandemic, like everyone else. And sometimes thinking about it makes me go drifting back to the loneliest period of my life. The first time I heard the word polio was over my shoulder. Parents at the time were terrified. They had seen March of Dimes posters of children in leg braces, newspaper pictures of excruciating physical therapy, rows of patients in iron lungs. But my mom maintained a low-key, don't scare the inmates, response to fear-inspiring events, at least among me and my brothers. Then one day when I was 5 years old, I was playing in our driveway with the neighborhood kids, and I suddenly felt ice cold. And as I was struggling up the front steps, a girl behind me said to my mother, Mrs. Tolley, she could have polio. My uncle does. That was September 15th, 1953. As an Irish Catholic girl, I always recall that I got polio on the feast of Our Lady of Sorrows. Within 3 days, my muscle pain turned into paralysis. I lost the ability to get up. My parents took me to the hospital for a spinal tap, the only way to diagnose polio back then. When they knew I had it, the doctors put me in an isolation room. My folks were allowed to visit for only 15 minutes twice a day and had to stay at the door the entire time. The toys they brought me had to be burned for fear of infection. When I saw pictures of people waving at their loved ones through nursing home windows in 2020, I remember how terrible that was. I lay in that bed for 10 days. I couldn't move anything but my head. When my fever finally broke, I was taken to St. Charles, a little Catholic hospital not too far from our home in Brooklyn that was run by the nuns, the Daughters of Wisdom. The 17 of us in the girls' ward lived in an alternative universe, with the schoolroom set up for kids in beds and wheelchairs. I'll never forget the loneliness of that time or the pain. Polio makes your muscles contract and paralyze. I had to lie there while the physical therapist tried to stretch them out again. After 3 months of excruciating physical therapy, a doctor said to my mother, "Good news. Her toe is moving." Mom's reaction was, "You can do better than that." She always made me feel that I could do whatever I wanted. After a while, I walked with a back brace and crutches and a leg brace, and I used a wheelchair for distance. After 2 years in the hospital, I got to go home. While I thought I'd keep getting better and end up like everyone else, eventually the doctors told me that my condition would never improve. That was the hardest thing to hear. Luckily, our local school got an elevator, so I was able to attend starting in seventh grade. Trying to fit in gave me something to focus on. From then on, my goal was to live as normally as I could. When I was 24, I moved to Seattle, away from the close-knit family I relied on, and built my own life working with troubled teens. I met a gorgeous guy at an Alfred Hitchcock festival when he offered to push my wheelchair up the hill. We got married and adopted a son I'm crazy about. Once I got post-polio syndrome, I had to use a wheelchair permanently, plus a vent to help me breathe. Then I concentrated on being a mom. The doctors told me I shouldn't expect to live past 30, so I'm grateful that I've extended my sell-by date by 4 decades. And that we got a vaccine, even if it came too late for me. I love being alive. I feel there are still things I can do. Not all of those girls who were in St. Charles with me made it. I remember then all of the girls, and I try to justify the fact that I got to keep going. Our next article is titled Finding Gratitude by Kate Bowler. Though the world may seem wobbly, we can steady ourselves by focusing on the things we are so thankful for. Here's a lesson in the art of appreciation amid uncertainty, and Oprah readers chime in to count their blessings. My 6-year-old peers intently at the laptop screen, brow deeply furrowed. His grandfather, thousands of miles away, is showing off his vast collection of historical dolls. Action figures, he always protests. They're action figures. A plastic Edgar Allan Poe, 5 inches tall, stares suspiciously at a raven on his shoulder. A knitted Leonardo da Vinci flops at the easel. My father holds up a figure with a familiar gray bouffant handbag dangling from one crooked elbow. "Do you know who this is?" he asks. My son shakes his head, transfixed. It's Queen Elizabeth II. Look at her sensible shoes and her teeny little hand waving. I'll show you how it's done. I watch as the pair of them royally wave to each other over Skype. Every night, this is our pre-bedtime ritual. I wash the dishes to the sound of my son asking my dad, the professor, questions about historical events. Do the pirates hate land? Who invented the holes in cheese? Have you ever seen a pyramid? There's something that I learned during my first encounter with a life stripping to the studs when I was diagnosed at age 35 with stage 4 colon cancer. It was a practice that started in waiting rooms and chemotherapy infusion chairs. Through blurry days and nights, a little habit grew. I began to notice the bizarre beauty of small details. My son's eyelashes so thick that I could count them one by one. The smell of the warm blanket the nurse brought me while I sat in the chair, pumped full of chemicals. How frost on autumn leaves make the perfect crunch. The shadows outside begin to lengthen, soften the long North Carolina day into a deeper night. Gratitude is the child of attention. When we stop to take in what's before us, a single moment becomes suddenly divisible into thousands. As theologian and mental health nurse John Swinton writes, there is fast time and there is slow time. Fast time is deadlines and efficiency and worksheets. Slow time moves at the speed of love. What's that my dad just said about cheese? I can hear the two of them now cackling like schoolboys. My father has moved on to doing an impression of Frederick Neusel, or maybe it's Yosemite Sam. There's a giant mustache involved. The counters are wiped, and for a second, the house almost looks clean. Now that I think of it, there's still ice cream left in the freezer. This moment, the more I linger, the deeper it grows. That's all for the Lifestyle Show. My name is Linda Martin. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more programming on VoiceCore, your audio access to the world.